Happy St. Patrick's Day, my dear friends and colleagues. I wanted to give you a few thoughts on this wonderful feast day of such a great saint. To help put our feasting, I have my Guinness here for later. I have a beautiful cup from Ireland. My oldest son brought it back to me. He had the great pleasure with one of his school outings to be in Ireland for the Easter Vigil with the bonfire and the great ceremony. About the year 2000, he was there long before the troubles that are there now. And he brought this mug back, and he has such fond memories of that trip. And so as we enjoy the fun and the festivities of this great day, I thought it would behoove all of us to reflect on why we celebrate him in the first place. It's a bit like Christmas with Santa Claus, and we tend to forget the reason for the season. So we need some cultural background, right? We need to put our minds back into the year of 313. You know, historians always need to have a little run-up to the individual or event that they're studying, and Patrick is no exception. In the year 313, we will recall that Constantine issued the Edict of Milan, or more commonly, which dealt with the toleration of the Christian faithful. The Christian church had been under serious persecution. It would wax and wane over the prior 300 years. And depending on the emperor and the secular events of the time, the Christian population would be under more or less serious persecution. If the crops were going well and the emperor was kind of busy doing his own business, he tended to leave the Christians alone. They were never, of course, considered one of the better parts of society, but they tended to leave them alone. But if there was civil war, inflation, political intrigue, which was often the case during Rome, then the Christians proved a very handy scapegoat. So 313, the Edict of Milan, was really a help to the Christian church. They were able to not face the persecution. Patrick is born somewhere around the year 387, so about 70 years later. His parents are both Christian. His father's a nobleman and a deacon. His mother is alleged to be of St. Martin of Tours, the famous saint. They lived in Britain, an outpost of the Roman Empire, and he had a really, comparatively wonderful life, a good home life. He was taught the faith. As a nobleman, he wasn't a servant or a slave. About the age of 16, Patrick is captured by some slavers, and his life of relative luxury and the love of his mother and father quickly come to an end. He's taken to Ireland, where he is forced to watch sheep outdoors. He has no roof over his head. I mean, whatever he can find in the island is his sanctuary, his home. And he is there for approximately 6 years, something like that, something in that neighborhood. He was there for a while. And he learns to pray. He learns to pray deeply. And like Augustine, he'll have a conversion experience. And I'd like to read to you from the Confessions of St. Patrick, a book that we avail ourselves of each day on his feast day. We start in part two at the beginning, and then this version, by edited and translated by D.R. Howlett, page 60. That after I had come to Ireland, I was consequently pasturing domestic animals daily, and often in the day I was praying. More and more the love of God and fear of Him was approaching, and faith was being increased and the Spirit was being stirred up, so that in a single day up to 100 prayers, and in night nearly the same. Even as I was staying in forest and on the mountain, and before dawn I was roused up to prayer, through snow, through frost, through rain, and I was feeling nothing bad, nor was there any sloth in me, as I see now, because the Spirit was being fervent in me then. And there, to be sure, on a certain night, in a dream, I heard a voice saying to me, "It is well that you are fasting, bound soon to go to your fatherland." And again, after a little time, I heard the answer saying to me, "Look, your ship is ready." And it was not near, but perhaps 200 miles. I think in this brief passage, we see him talking about Spirit. He's being Spirit-filled. He mentions the Spirit. He recognizes the Spirit being stirred up within him. He sees the Spirit motivating his prayer. He has no sloth. He's quick in the Lord. He's having dreams. He hears a voice. He acts on that voice to go and minister to the people. He has no doubt, that his ship is waiting, even though that's 200 miles away. He's a slave, right? There's no interstates. There's no cars. He doesn't even have freedom. And, of course, a runaway slave then as now is a death sentence. That's what his time of imprisonment did for him. It provided him a moment of intense prayer where he could come to know the Lord, not just in the way of his childhood, but now in the way as a man with a mission. And he will go on to 6 years. Yes, he was in slavery for 6 years. I see that in the book. He will go on. He goes to back to Britain. He discerns a call to the priesthood. He enters into the seminary, and then in a dream, just like Joseph, just like in visions with Abraham. And remember, Abraham acted on what he heard, and it was credited to him as righteousness. Patrick will hear again in a dream, "Go back, Patrick, we need you." And he goes. He gets up and he goes back to where he was imprisoned as a slave. So why is that at all important? Because, my dear friends, you and I would not be enjoying our pint. We would not be enjoying rule of law that we have. We would not be enjoying this Western civilization had it not been for Patrick. Thomas Cahill, and I have to give, so I have some props here, because I have some, the real ones about Patrick in Ireland are on loan, and I'm trying to track those down. But Thomas Cahill, this is my show and tell. This book is his national bestseller, The Gift of the Jews. He also has an excellent book, and that's the one I'm about to talk about right at the moment, on how the Irish saved Western civilization. So we come back to our dates. We're recalling, now Patrick is now about the mid-400s when he is going to Ireland to convert a wild and pagan people to the faith. The fall of Rome by the Visigoths is 410. Thomas Cahill, and he does it so nicely and so succinctly. It's worth the time devoted to reading that. I have other books about Western civilization, Tommy Stark, blah, blah, blah. But I think to focus in on the Irish contribution to Western civilization, Thomas Cahill does a very nice job of it. And so we have Rome falling under the barbarian attack. Out in these wild hinterlands, we have St. Patrick teaching the people about God, about truth, right? As a Christian, we have some promises from Christ. And one of them is that we will know the truth, and truth will set us free. and it set the Irish people free through, you know, Patrick's bringing them to the encounter with Christ, right? We have a, if you will, a bit of a charismatic figure here. He knows the Spirit. He has dreams and visions, and he's going to convey that encounter, that living encounter with the Lord to the Russian people. So much so, he's going to start to gather men and women who want to devote their life entirely to the work of the faith. And of course, I'm talking about the monasteries. And within those monasteries, they are going to be doing what? They are going to be transcribing and writing and doing those beautiful manuscripts, the Book of Kells, of the Word of God, which is, right, the sword. It's one of our major sources of truth. We are not sola scriptura. It can't be, you know, it can't be. But it's absolutely a foundational part of our coming to truth. And those monks, and I'm not sure about the nuns, if they would have been tasked with it, sit and compose the scriptures as Rome is burning, as Latin and Greece falls from view under the night of the Dark Ages. We have little candles burning in the monasteries. So here is a book on the illuminated manuscripts. And I want to take a look and see how beautiful this is. And that is what, right? It could take a lifetime. It could take a lifetime patiently copying out the scriptures year after year, decade after decade, century after century, in Latin, in Greek, you know, where it's appropriate, because we know that there's some words in scripture that could be Greek, and of course Hebrew. And that is what Thomas Cahill will assert, is in those citadels, hidden from view, civilization was preserved. So that when the time was right for the reflowering, the early Renaissance, the Thomas Aquinas's and the Bonaventures, and Anselm's about 1,000, you know, a couple hundred years later, we have the Scholastics. That fruit, that careful nurturing of the faith that the Irish monks gave, can now come back and provide such great fruit. That, I think, has a lot of bearing on where we are today. I think sometimes we can look out and think things look pretty dark. But we have to be like Patrick to those people around us. And we have to sometimes be like the monks, just patiently doing the tasks that have been given to us. Now, I have a few other suggestions for your family that we have found helpful through the years, and you can decide if that sounds good to you. CCC has a bunch of very accessible tapes for children. Again, my St. Patrick is on loan, and so I'm trying to track that down. I have some suspicions where it might be residing, but I have to find them. This one's on Nicholas, right? I talked about Santa Claus earlier and the true story of Santa Claus with St. Nicholas. Same with St. Patrick. They have a beautiful, beautiful one of St. Patrick. Another excellent resource, read to the children every year, is Patrick, Patron Saint of Ireland by Tommy DiPaola. If you recall, I used his book with Our Lady of Guadalupe. He has a number of the saints in there. Beautiful. Again, let's hear. Beautiful. Beautiful work. Beautiful, beautiful. Let's see if we can. Here's Saint Francis out as a shepherd. Very accessible. And if you yourself are unsure of your faith, these children resources are just an excellent, excellent place to begin your study. And so I conclude back to the fun part of why we celebrate this day. We always watch The Quiet Man with John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara. It's just wonderful. It's kind of refreshing to see how Hollywood treated Catholics and the faith back in the day. And I have a true story. The family, so we had six children at the time, were in Rome. We were there for the Jubilee in 2000. And I truly, very innocently, no leprechaun, no trying to stir the pot. We were in our hotel, and there were a bunch of Irish people. And I had never encountered corned beef before coming from Texas. It looked a little odd and strange to me. But, you know, I want to do things in a true and right way. So I asked this lobby full of Irish people, is corned beef is that a real Irish food, or is that something Americanized that had been done to the dinner? And I thought there was going to be a brawl. There was the faction that said yes, and, you know, it was just a corruption of the Irish who came over here and they couldn't get good beef and it was a way to preserve it, and blah, blah, blah. And the other group said, no, that's really an Irish dinner. It's really an Irish dinner. You can have it. And just watching them kind of go back and forth, just kind of reminded me of a couple of scenes out of The Quiet Man in the bar and brawling. So with that, enjoy the day, and to the next time, Fides et Ratio. Thank you.